Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All the way back to 2008. Ruination, the early years.
Welcome to Ruination, the early years.
This is the show where we take this absolutely massive archive of Big Fatty Online's early work.
We do. We unpack all that content and we try to deliver the essential knowledge, the, you know, the key insights directly to you.
Yeah.
I'm King, your guide. And joining me is our expert who helps us make sense of what is often just magnificent chaos.
And we are really diving into a pivotal week here. We're looking at Big Fatty's daily shows, episodes 82 all the way through 86.
Right, which covers the week of May 26th to May 30th, 2008.
Exactly.
And our mission for this deep dive is really to synthesize this one very specific, very dense 5-day stretch in his life.
It really is. It feels like a perfect microcosm of his entire show, his whole persona.
It's this collision, right? You have the chaos of the Memorial Day holiday on one side, mm-hmm. and then on the other, this really rigid commitment to his personal structure. I mean, we're talking dentist appointments, work routines.
Yeah. And then on top of all of that, the really intense, almost military grade logistical planning for the upcoming Gay Days Hoop Manny.
It's fascinating. It brings us right back to that core BFO paradox.
It does. The show itself is built on such a reliable schedule. It's a daily weekday broadcast from what he calls the coal mine.
His work desk, basically.
His work desk. And it's all founded on that mantra, you know, the one that's become so iconic.
It's not just ruined. It's me, Big Fatty Online.
That's the one. And that structure, that rigid, like 20-minute daily format, that's the canvas.
Without that consistency, I don't think any of the chaotic, personal, and let's be honest, really explicit stories would land with the same weight.
No, you're right. The schedule makes the chaos predictable, which is what makes it consumable for the audience.
You absolutely hit the nail on the head. So I think we have to start with the chaos, specifically the kind of charged, explicit chaos that only a long holiday weekend can bring.
Okay, so this first section is all about Memorial Day weekend, how he engages his listeners, and of course, the explicit humor.
So the week opens on Monday, May 26th. It's Memorial Day.
And he immediately grounds the show in that reality. He acknowledges it's the last Monday in May, and he even spends a little time talking about how it's the federal holiday people always confuse with Labor Day.
Which is true. It's a small thing, but it's very relatable.
It is, but this is BFO, so of course it doesn't stay a dry observation for long.
Not at all. It immediately pivots to the local Chicago context, specifically the IML crowd.
International Mr. Leather, descending on the city. He notes that because of the holiday, they're all arriving, and since he now lives, a stone's throw from the Eagle.
Which is a huge historic fixture in the leather community.
Right. He says he needs to get ready.
So the holiday isn't just a day off. It's a specific local community event that he is now, you know, right next to.
And he's joking about getting ready for big tour buses full of fatties and leather.
It's that blend again, isn't it? The mundane federal holiday calendar crashing right into the very specific, intimate traffic of the Chicago leather scene.
It totally is. It's so localized and niche, but it's anchored by something everybody knows, the holiday.
And even with all that going on, he still sticks to his structure, the community check-in.
Yes, he's updated the listener map, which he's so meticulous about. And he welcomes two new members very specifically.
Who were they?
First was Keith from Honolulu, Hawaii.
And his immediate reaction is a joke, right?
Oh, yeah. An almost reflexive cultural joke, asking if Keith plays the ukulele.
It's a bit dated, maybe, but it's very much his conversational style. Just quick, a little bit dismissive.
Exactly. And then he also welcomes an unidentified listener who joined back on May 16th. And he notes this person has a picture with a Hyrorian shirt, but for some reason they're not showing up on the map correctly.
I find that detail fascinating.
Yeah.
It shows how closely he's watching. He's prioritizing the visual proof from the listener, the photo, the shirt, over what the software is telling him.
The personal connection is more important than the digital pin on the map.
Yeah. And that attention to detail, it extends right to his relationship with the audience, the transactional part of it.
You're talking about the Amazon wish list.
Exactly. He updated the link on bigfatonline.com. He pulls it out of its special little box and moves it to the top of the heap section.
Which is more than just website housekeeping. It's a move toward, like, normalizing it, making it part of the main page.
Totally. He moved the link, but he also integrated it into the show's content. He announces a new segment for when a wish is granted.
And immediately confirms a wish has already come true.
Right. He turns a simple donation link into serialized participatory content. It gives you a reason to keep coming back.
Okay, so from that structure, we have to pivot to the glorious, unscripted chaos of the Drunky voice letters.
This is what really dominates the first half of the week, isn't it? It gives the show that signature ruined quality.
Oh, completely. It's the holiday vibe on full display.
And we start with Mike from Richmond, Virginia.
Mike calls in, announces he's coming out of listener closet. He's praising BFO and, importantly, the old Little Fatty cast.
Which is a crucial nod to the show's history, to its roots.
It is, and Mike is just so exuberant. He's claiming Richmond is already ruined, but that it needs the extra ruination stack that Big Fatty would bring if he visited.
And Big Fatty's immediate reaction is to speculate about, well, about Mike's sobriety.
He guesses Mike may have had a vodka melon.
The watermelon injected with vodka, a real cultural touchstone of that era.
It really was. And Big Fatty takes this simple voice letter and turns it into this piece of, like, specific culinary intoxication lore. He's setting a benchmark for how drunk you should be when you call in on a holiday weekend.
But it's Mike's next call in episode 85 that is really the peak of the chaos.
The chaos crescendo. I like that. Yeah. Yes. He calls back. He's driving. He's near Seymour Gaunson Air Force Base in North Carolina.
And he leaves this just meandering, explicit, and very suggestive message.
The content is truly unhinged. He's rambling about soreness, leakage, and whatnot.
And then the very direct desire for more Johnson, playing on the name of the Air Force Base.
It's geographical context meets bodily fluids. The combination is just absurd.
And Big Fatty, he recognizes the structural value of this kind of chaos, and he immediately anoints Mike.
He does. He nicknames him the modern-day version of Drunky Bill.
Now, for listeners who might not know the deep lore, Drunky Bill was the original chaos agent. He's a legendary recurring character from the old Little Fatty cast days.
He was the yardstick, the gold standard by which all future drunk, explicit callers would be measured.
And that comparison is so important. By naming Mike the successor to Drunky Bill, he's sending a signal to the whole community.
He's saying this kind of participation isn't just tolerated, it's a core part of the show's legacy. He even tells Mike, "I love your phone calls, please do not stop."
He's actively encouraging it. He knows that's where the best, most unpredictable content comes from.
And we get another classic example from Brian from Boston, who he calls the historian.
Right, Brian calls in hammered. Huh? From the Boston Eagle, just to wish Big Fatty a happy birthday.
And just like another listener, Jeremiah, he gives them that extra layer of audio gold by forgetting to hang up the phone.
So you get this long, unedited reality of the phone call, which becomes the punchline itself. He uses the error as a feature, not a bug.
It's his whole aesthetic.
It is. But I have to wonder, does actively encouraging that chaos, you know, anointing a new Drunky Bill, does that risk the overall coherence of the show?
That is the tension he's always managing. But I think for Big Fatty, the coherence is the novelty. A super polished, highly produced show would just kill the intimacy.
So he's inviting us to listen to the show fail.
In a way, yes. To listen to the raw, unedited moments of life leaping in. Mike's second call, Brian not hanging up. That's proof the audience is participating in the ruination theme themselves.
And he's not just an observer. Big Fatty adds his own explicit fantasies to the mix, proving he's right there in it with them.
The big salami.
The big salami. In episode 82, he shares his wish for a big salami, to call him all Memorial Day weekend long.
And it's not just a wish. He makes a very explicit public offer, saying he would take care of a big salami pretty much every chance I can get.
It's that blend again. The domesticity of a long holiday weekend and just absolute unflinching explicitness. The holiday becomes a stage for shared fantasy.
That fantasy, the big salami wish, it really shows the headspace he was in for the holiday.
It does. But even that freedom is bound by the calendar, because the next day the holiday is over and he's right back to the mundane reality of his personal structure.
Exactly. So we have to pivot and pivot sharply into the bedrock of his life. Ooh. Personal structure, aging, and appointments. This is what makes all that chaos possible.
So despite the long weekend, he is still grounded by his job at the coal mine.
And in episode 83, he makes that super relatable observation that 4-day work weeks, because of a holiday, always feel longer than a regular 5-day week.
Everyone has felt that. That feeling of being out of your routine, it's an immediate connection point.
It shows that even the host of the most ruined show is, subject to the same anxieties of the work calendar.
But he does say the strain is a little bit easier this week because his routine is broken up by appointments.
Right. The dreaded dentist appointment on Thursday and some kind of event on Friday morning.
And that dentist visit, which he talks about in episode 85, becomes this really crucial part of the week's story.
He's not happy about it. He asks the listeners to wish him luck. And crucially, the dentist reminds him how old he is.
By telling him his 30-year-old fillings need to be replaced. Fillings he got when he was a kid.
This is a perfect example of his brand management. He takes a mundane, unpleasant health issue, the cost of decay, the evidence of aging, and he makes it a public, relatable, and kind of funny confession.
The ruination isn't just external. It's literally happening inside his mouth.
After 30 years of wear and tear, yeah.
And that theme of aging is the perfect segue into his ongoing series, Growing Old and Gay.
In episodes 84 and 85, he brings back Auntie Vera Charles.
The old gal, the sea hag.
That's her. She lives in Walnut Hills, California, with Myron and Hubert. And they continue their discussion about turning 50.
This is more than just a chat, though. He uses these talks to really lay out his personal philosophy on life and aging.
He does. He declares, completely unequivocally, I just don't give a what people think.
And that's the mission statement for the whole show, isn't it? That idea underpins everything he does.
It is. He says that people who dislike his lifestyle, who judge him, they're just missing an opportunity to meet me.
And he backs up. He says he actively goes up to new people in bars and introduces himself. He doesn't wait for them to come to him. He lives the radical openness he preaches on the show.
And we even get a little structural note in there. He confirms the next installment of the Vera Charles series will air the following Wednesday.
Which is his travel day to Orlando for the Hootenanny.
Exactly. It shows how meticulously he plans his recurring content around his personal logistics. He's maximizing engagement even when he's on the road.
And finally, grounding the whole show even further, he gives us some really serious, detailed financial updates in episode 86.
He got his Social Security statement, and he shares the exact dollar figure he's paid into the system.
$55,036.
$55,036.
And this is where the trust with his audience becomes just profound. In 2008, sharing the cold, hard numbers of your personal finances was genuinely radical.
Oh, absolutely. Most public figures would never do that. He's intentionally tearing down that boundary.
To share that specific number, it's not just honesty. It's a calculated move to prove he's just as middle class and ordinary as his listeners.
He's telling them, I have the same paperwork, the same anxieties about the future that you do. That transparency about the mundane is the ultimate foundation.
It's vulnerability as a content strategy. He has to prove he's ordinary so they'll accept his extraordinary stories.
And he wraps up the updates by issuing a correction, which shows a commitment to being accountable, even for something trivial.
The American Idol winner, he corrects himself, notes that David Cook won, not David Archuleta.
But then, in a classic move, he immediately softens it by saying Archuleta is still cute as he can be.
The facts matter, but the aesthetic judgment matters more.
Every single time.
So if his personal structure, the dentist, the Social Security statement, if that's the bedrock,
then the logistical planning for the upcoming trip is the megastructure built on top of it.
Let's get into that. Section 3, the Gay Days megastructure and network planning. The chaos of Mike's drunk calls is now totally replaced by the precision of an event planner.
Yes. The upcoming event is Gay Days at Disney in Orlando, June 5th to the 9th. It's coming up fast.
And he says the planning stage is so intense it might be gay-da-zee before it's over.
Which is a great line. It's a funny nod to the sheer amount of work that goes into coordinating something this big.
And the centerpiece of the whole thing is the dinner theater event.
Right, organized by Michael from QCast Connection. A roast and toast them show at Sleuth's Mystery Dinner Theater on Thursday, June 5th.
And this isn't just a casual get-together. It's a formal event designed specifically for their podcast network community.
And Big Fatty makes a point of highlighting the massive discount they got. The price drops from $50 down to just $20.
That is a critical detail. He's showing that the BFO show and the RNL podcasting network are providing actual, tangible value to their community. They're negotiating deals.
Exactly. And that $20 includes the meal, all you can drink wine and beer and dessert.
And he specifically says he and his eldest daughter, Miss Holly, will be there for the dessert. That detail just it integrates his private family life right into the public network structure.
It does. And in episode 85, he lays out the full guest list. He confirms he and Larry Klein,
his old co-host from Little Fatty Cast,
are traveling down next Wednesday, And the list of who's coming is basically a who's who of the RNL podcasting network at the time.
We hear about Ricky from the Foul Monkeys, Michael and Superb B, the return of British John from QCast Connection.
Termini single Tim, Jason, and Ryan from The Way We See It. This is more than a party. It's a high-level networking summit. And Big Fatty is clearly the center of gravity.
And by naming all of them, he's publicly validating their contributions to the bigger community.
He even lists the notable absences, which is just as important. He mentions Eric from Confessions of a Southern Boy and Wes Stone from Live It Up.
And he notes that Wes Stone is hosting a separate West Coast Hoot Nanny.
Right. So by saying who isn't coming, he reinforces the exclusive nature of the Orlando event. But he's also subtly bragging that the network is now so big that they have to have parallel events.
And the absurdity of the planning just peaks with the packing list tease in episode 86.
Oh, this is great. He's hoping to post his packing list over the weekend, complete with pictures of his gay day paraphernalia and camisoles.
Referencing his recent self-correction on what a camisole actually is, which we talked about before.
He's literally turning the chore of packing a suitcase into anticipated visual content for his website.
It's classic BFO. He's blending the necessary logistics with the suggestive paraphernalia to keep people checking his website over the break.
And the section wraps with one last piece of community growth. Bajorn from Dallas, Texas joins the listener map, thanking him for the ruined times.
So the community just keeps growing, fueled by this constant stream of logistical and chaotic updates.
That really structured planning for the future is such a sharp contrast to how he views pop culture from the past.
Yeah, let's shift gears. Section 4, pop culture nostalgia and content links. This is where he really shows his expertise as a self-appointed cultural historian.
He starts, as always, by promoting content from his network. He points to a new $1 million password video on the BFO website.
And he notes the specific detail that the host, Regis Philbin, sticks his foot in his mouth.
Which tells you what he's interested in. Not the polished celebrity performance, but the human, awkward moments of TV.
Then we get into the really deep cuts, the classic TV archive.
Yes. He posts the original 1982 Jeopardy theme music, which he says gets stuck in his head, and he calls out the bongos in bad fashion.
He has this almost encyclopedic knowledge of these minor cultural artifacts. He links the theme music to Pat Sajak's show music and even the 1982 World's Fair theme.
And the crucial piece of trivia he shares is telling listeners to see what the show was like before Alex Trebek,
who he jokes is now selling insurance.
It's a hilarious joke that uses Trebek's long, stable career to contrast with how weird and obscure the show used to be. He's contextualizing cultural history for the audience.
And he also touches on contemporary media with the announcement of the Beverly Hills 90210 remake on the CW.
And he immediately makes a joke about the network's name, calling it the Covered Wagon.
It's a commentary on reboots and nostalgia, right?
Yeah.
He notes that none of the original cast are coming back.
Which is his way of judging its potential. For him, nostalgia needs to be authentic. A reboot without the original faces is just, it's an empty vessel.
Okay. But the listener-shared content in episode 86 is just this perfect mix of bizarre, nostalgic, and suggestive. We have to break this down.
It really defines the aesthetic of ruination he's looking for.
Let's start with the bizarre. Brian from Danbury sends a picture of a tattoo.
A horrifying tattoo of Bob Barker, the game show host.
But he looks like a skeleton.
He looks like a skeleton, and underneath it says, "Come on down."
And Big Fatty's reaction is to thank Brian for thinking of me when you do find things horrifying.
Which is the highest compliment in the BFO universe. The tattoo is, you know, objectively awful, maybe grotesque.
Yeah.
But for Big Fatty, it's artistically perfect because it captures that ruination aesthetic. It takes something wholesome and twists it into this macabre piece of art.
Then we get the deep cut nostalgia from Tim in Tampa.
He sends two questions. The first is about Alan Kazer, who played Bubba Higgins on Mama's Family.
A very vanilla sitcom.
Fair. And Tim asks what he's up to now, but the key detail is that he remembers how well Bubba used to fill out his jeans on the show.
Which is such a specific moment of queer media gaze. It shows how the audience consumes even the most mainstream stuff through this very specific, often sexualized lens of memory.
And Big Fatty loves that kind of deep character analysis.
And Tim's second question brings it back to local chaos.
Right. He references a black bear that wandered onto the Hard Rock Hotel property in Orlando and asks if gay days started early.
And Big Fatty just uses it as a setup for a great joke about identity.
Yeah. He notes that he himself is a sort of bear, but he is not black. It's just a very fast, sharp joke that uses a local news story to comment on community labels.
And he closes the section with this high-energy plug for a network pier.
Kim Beaver's Lodge. He tells everyone to go there to see two of the funniest Fing pictures you have ever seen.
And that extreme language? It's a strategy to drive traffic. He's leveraging that shared expectation of high-level ruination.
This whole section just proves his show is this thriving ecosystem. It's built on his own nostalgia, his analysis, and the weird, wonderful stuff his listeners send him.
It really is. So let's wrap this up with Section 5, the Eternal Ruination and Core Character Updates. This brings us back to some foundational BFO lore.
We get the important updates on Larry H. Vader.
Big Fatty's former co-host and essential friend from the old days.
Vader is recovering from a fall down the steps of his family condo. And by episode 86, Big Fatty tells us he's bruised and beat up, and the bruises are now turning green.
And this is where the information gets presented through that lens of dark comedy.
The speculation on the bruises, yeah. He guesses Vader is either healing or becoming a Martian and spoiling. It's just this absurd way of dealing with bodily trauma.
But the final crucial update is the ultimate statement of his priorities.
Vader is fine.
Vader is fine, but more importantly, the map book is okay.
The map book, the logistical tool, is given equal, if not superior, status to his friend's physical health. It's a running gag that just reinforces his philosophy. The structural tools must be protected.
And even with all the chaos and planning this week, he's still looking to improve the show's production.
In episode 84, he mentions wanting sound effects for the show.
Which is a recurring request. It shows he wants to add some production value, but without losing that essential rawness.
It's that internal tension of any growing show. How do you stay intimate while also becoming more professional?
He's figuring that out in real time. And he uses the end of the week to remind everyone how to engage.
All the channels. Leave a comment on the website, email him at ruin@bigfatandline.com, or call the voicelet number.
And give him their good gosh and gamey.
And he ends episode 86 with one last tease. He has to.
Of course. He hints that more updates on the Gay Days planning will be posted over the weekend. He's ensuring the audience is hooked and checking his website even when the Daily Show is off.
It's organized chaos right down to the downtime.
It is the perfect end to a week that was just. It was organized chaos held up by this rigid commitment.
Looking back at this week, episodes 82 to 86, that tension is the biggest takeaway for me.
Big Fatty's show thrives because he maintains such rigorous logistical precision. The detailed plans for the roast and toast, the meticulous guest lists, tracking listeners on the map.
That precise structure is the foundation that gives him the license to share the most chaotic content imaginable. The drunk calls from Mike, the big salami fantasy, that horrifying Bob Barker tattoo.
The personal structure underwrites the whole ruined enterprise. He takes these mundane details, the cost of his 30-year-old fillings, the specific $55,000 he's paid into Social Security, and makes them part of his public story.
By being so radically open about the boring parts of his life, he validates the listener's own mundane struggles.
And that, in turn, gives him the absolute freedom to share the outrageous parts. The consistency of The Daily Show is what makes the chaos so palatable and so engaging.
And that raises, I think, a really interesting question for you, the listener, based on this week's deep dive.
Big Fatty built his whole following on that honesty and consistency.
So what seemingly boring, consistent fact of your own life, I don't know, maybe the exact temperature of your shower, the specific route you walk your dog, the amount of time you spend scrolling receipts, what consistent, repeatable fact could you commit to sharing daily?
What uninteresting detail could act as the foundation for building a genuine connection? And allow the extraordinary parts of your life to be seen through a truly authentic lens.
That structured consistency really is the secret ingredient to ruination.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into Big Fatty's Week. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
And crucially, be sure to tune in next weekend for the newest episode of Ruination, The Early Years.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's trip down memory lane on Ruination, The Early Years. Join us again next weekend. We'll see you then.